Okay, so let's talk about the markets just a bit. We're going to talk about soybeans today. We're going to talk about corn. We have some great folks here. Glenn Ring is here, and at least I guess he's here. I haven't seen him yet this morning. Glenn is here. He's going to be up in a little bit. Dan Bossi is here. And more importantly for us at the moment is we have a panel of experts to talk about the marketplace. And the way we do this is pretty simply. We'll give them 3 to 5 minutes each or however much time they need to talk about the markets up front, and then we'll take questions. If you have questions, just raise your hand or write them down and hand them out. Raise your hand. I'll come and get them so that we can get your questions answered. On the panel this morning with us, Larry Wood, who is with the Andersons, along with Kirk Kimmel, who's the senior grain analyst at Bates Commodities, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana, Dan Zwicker with ADM Grain Group, he's in Decatur, Illinois, and Brian Maples at FC Stone out of Indianapolis. So we'll start with Brian this morning and let him talk a little bit about the bean market to begin with. Good morning, Brian. Did you have a good drive over today?
It was an easy drive over. Am I on?
Not yet.
Yeah,
you are now.
It was a fairly easy drive over this morning. I was kind of worried about it when we got up this morning, but ended up being a very good day to drive over here, and we were just a little concerned. But I want to thank WILL for putting this program on. It's a great program, a great group again, as we had last year. These are exciting times to be involved in our business, as we've got the highest prices we've ever seen in all three commodities, and that doesn't look like it's totally finished with at this point. These are opportunistic markets. You've got tremendous opportunity out here. Normally, when we see these big price moves that we've seen this year, we're sitting here looking at some huge inverses out for the next years, and you can't sell stuff beyond to try and lock down values that, are, once again, are an opportunistic-type marketplace. So you've got opportunity today that just abounds. I think you could go out today and sell 100% of your crop for next year, corn and beans and wheat, and more than likely you'll have a tremendous revenue-generating year on your farm. But how you deal with that, if beans continue to run and make a move up towards $18-$20, if corn ends up going to $7, is going to be a large part of what you have to deal with this year, is trying to get your arms around your emotional attack on this marketplace, because it's going to drive you nuts. I had a phone call from a customer of mine here last week, and he said, I've got all this old crop corn. We haven't sold it yet. What do I do? It's just driving me crazy. My stomach's tied in knots every morning. And I said, then go sell some. You know you made a lot of money off of it. Go sell some of it and don't worry about it. And I think that's what you have to look at today, is you've got an opportunistic market, that there's many things that are going to change over time, and I don't know what those are going to be today. I think there's 5 things that could dramatically shift the marketplace. I think you've got talk of it coming out of the Fed here last week, and not that he has any ability to change anything, but Bernanke made reference that he thinks that our tariffs should be reduced on biofuels coming back into the U.S. If they change that, it changes the makeup of our marketplace. If they change the bio credits going back to the ethanol and biodiesel producers, changes things dramatically. The EPA, the USDA, all can make changes in the mandates if they choose to. So far, they don't appear that they want to do any of that. But at any point in time, if prices get out of hand, they feel like things have gotten carried away, they can make some changes. So if you're looking for reasons why you should step out and start to maybe take advantage of these price levels, because beans today are roughly twice what they were a year ago when we did this program, and you're roughly 22% above the all-time high that we ever had before in beans. We were 1290 was our previous all-time high, and we're currently roughly twice that at today's value. So there's opportunity out here. There's excitement out here. But I think it's going to be how you handle your emotions.
Brian Maple with FC Stone. Brian, what day are you on the radio?
Mondays.
Mondays. You can
Monday
hear
Monday a.m.
And Monday in the a.m. on the pre-opening market report, which airs at 8:49 Central Time. Dan Zwicker, you can hear on the opening and the closing market report on Thursdays at 9:50 and at 2:06. He's with ADM Grain Group. Dan?
Am I on here? This
You're
is
on.
Echoing. Is there anything we can do about this?
That's
echoing?
Because we have to have it loud enough so that they can hear it in the back and you're just bouncing. That's an echo from the back of the room.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Are you good with that?
Yeah, I guess I'll get along
okay,
with it.
Okay, good.
just briefly, I guess, from a technical perspective, I think soybeans either have or have come real close to meeting some of their short-term technical objectives. I had like a 15.88 on the lead option futures, and I had a 14.65 on a November 08 future. So I think in the short run here, we're awfully close to having met some key technical objectives. The other thing is, for those of you that do follow some of my work, know that I watch like an eight-week cycle in soybeans. And basically, since we pulled out of the July-August lows, the market, each one of these eight-week cycles have gone up about 7 weeks, and then we would set back for about 1 week, and we'd regroup and turn around and go back up again. Currently, we're in week six, so I do think we're in a cyclical time frame here that the market could give us a pretty good kick. Whether it's this week or next week, I do think we're going to get some kind of kick to the downside in the market. The other thing is for those of you that do follow some of these technical indicators, we are up at some very high levels, both on daily and monthly charts. So while I'm friendly yet on soybeans, I think some yellow flags are out in here to kind of be a little cautious for a week or two anyway. And, of course, you know, the main ingredient of where we go from here, I think, is going to be hinged upon what the March 31st numbers kind of tell us as far as acres go and remaining inventory. The market does feel as though maybe soybean inventory levels aren't quite as large as what the USDA balance sheets are indicating. There's really been no problem of moving inventory into the world market. We can pretty well move about anything that we've wanted to move into the world market. China's been a good buyer. But eventually the South American inventories are going to catch and probably, you know, put a little pressure on us. The other thing is I think most of your surveys are indicating that there's going to be some pretty large increase in new crop soybean plantings, and I think ultimately that's probably going to be somewhat of a negative influence, and of course a lot of that will depend on April weather. At this point, it does look like we're following a La Nina weather pattern that's somewhat typical, or the default pattern anyway, is going to keep precip in the Ohio River Valley and the eastern half of the Corn Belt. Has a tendency to maybe keep temperatures a little cooler than normal. So that may add a little bearishness to the bean complex because people may begin to speculate that we may have difficulty in the early going of corn planting, whether it would be slow or delayed. And anything of that nature would, I think, add some bearishness to the soybean complex, or at least since we're already headed in that direction of larger acreage. Other than that, I think that's all I'll comment on right now. I'll take questions later.
All right. Thank you very much, Dan. You can hear him on Thursdays on the radio station. Next to Dan is Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. Joins us in the opening and the closing market reports on Tuesdays. He won't be there today on the radio because he's here with us. Good morning to you, Wayne.
Well, good morning, Todd, and I'd like to have a big welcome to all you guys that took time to drive out in what's supposed to be really bad weather. This is a tremendous turnout. I can remember when we started this about 18 years ago. We didn't have quite this many people, did we, Todd?
No.
You know,
it was about 100.
You know, we're just thrilled to be here. It's great to see all of you, and I hope that we can offer you something that will be of value by the time you leave. Soybean prices. wow. I never in my wildest dreams thought they'd be as high as they are. I thought that $13 would stop them. There were people like Dan who was projecting on up farther, but I just thought fundamentals were not there. We have our total crops, if we would take into consideration as dollar value, is about $116 billion, which is corn, beans, wheat, everything like that. The funds have $2.8 trillion that they have to invest in this market. They have made you a lot of money at this point in time. They are the driving force to this market besides China and India and the world demand for everything that's going on out there. It is amazing what those two countries have done to the prices of fertilizer, oil, metals, everything that goes along the way. That and the sinking dollar has made these prices go extremely high. There's a lot of people out there now that are saying there just aren't enough acres to satisfy planting enough for food and fuel and all the crops that we need and the deficit that we have going into this year as far as shortfalls and weather problems that we've had in the past. There are people that say there's no weather premium in this market, so that makes us a little bit scared to be really aggressive sellers. If we would happen to have the La Nina that Dan alluded to, that we were talking about that way. There are other people that say if we have good weather, if we have the switch over to beans, as Alan Dale alluded to in his predictions of a 10 million acre increase from last year, that we're $2 too high with decent weather on the beans right now. But on the other side of that, we've got people buying calls way above the market in corn, beans, bean oil, and bean meal. And we look at that way. So, you know, 2008 seems to be the year of the soybean. It's made new all-time contract highs. It doesn't seem to be slowing down. Dan talked about a 1 or 2 week setback, but he didn't say it was over after it set back by what I heard listening here. So there's some tremendous opportunities, you know, as we look. And I think that what you have to do as a farmer or producer is look at the lesser of two regrets. Do we sell some here? Are we more scared of it going down without getting something priced here? Do we need to buy puts to let it run to the upside? Or do we need to sell the cash at these levels and buy a call to replace? Or just plain sell the cash? Or sit on our hands? You have to decide what, if down the road the market changes, what you're going to regret the most. Some of the, you know, what's the worst case scenario? Am I going to be more sorry I don't have some left to sell, or am I going to be more sorry the price goes down? Some of the things will tell us the top is in is if the government changes the rules. Will they release the CRP? That would change a lot because then we'd have more acres. The ethanol mandate, is that going to do anything? Are they going to drop the import tax on ethanol because bean oil has followed palm oil, has followed crude oil? The weather, you know, if by mid-July we've got everything looking good and whatever, there's going to be some of the, they say there's no weather premium, but there is. And, of course, there's the China economy. If it doesn't continue to grow by 5% or more, we will see things set back also. We saw alluded to that China's trying to have price controls in their country. It's a flop. There are people that won't sell because the price controls are below what they can sell it on the black market. So it isn't moving the product internally like that. And probably the best kicker that we have to help the soybeans is bean oil, food oil that way, that is going into China wants to look good for the Olympics, and they want to stay good. So thank you, and we'll talk more later.
Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities. Next to him is the senior grain analyst at Bates Commodities. His name is Kurt Kimmel. Joins us on Mondays on the opening and the closing market report. Hi, Kurt. Thanks for making it over today.
Well, good morning, Todd. It's always a fun and a pleasure to be here. This is sort of the highlight of the year. Like Wayne, every time he gets up and does a presentation this winter, his first words have always been, wow. Well, Wayne, it's a dream come true. We've been dreaming about these markets for the last 25, 30 years, and here they are. But just follow Wayne a little bit. The main emphasis has been the funds. We're talking trillions upon trillions of dollars. And it's just a dynamic scenario here with them coming into the investment environment. But what we're seeing is if you talk to a hedge fund manager or a fund manager, their theme is they're investing in undervalued commodities. What's undervalued and overvalued is kind of hard to dictate, but what they're doing, they're indexing it to inflation. And if you go back to past history, crude oil is about where they thought it would go if you indexed inflation. Gold, their target is $1,000 to $1,200 a contract. Now, what is the goal for the bean market? In your handout on about the next to last page, we did a chart where we index it to inflation back to the 73 rally. If you go back, if the funds are truly going to stick to their theme, we've reached their first objective of $15 to $16. The next objective would be $25 a bushel. If you're going to the 73 high, it's going to be $40 a bushel. So that is the positive news from the commodity funds in general. How high is high?
Wait a second. Did you say $40? You know, I'm going to stop you for a second because there was that's kind of funny. Now, I have to admit, I'll tell a quick story and then I'll let you go on. When I first came back to the station in July of 2003, and Dave Dickey can tell you this, we had one guest on Commodity Week in July of 2003 who came on and said $22 beans. I walked out of the two studio and I said, Dave, never invite him back again. $40 corn, or no, $40 beans. All right, sorry.
Basically, a year ago, you're all laughing when we said beans in the teens, and here we are.
I know. You know what? I'm not getting rid of Kurt. I like him too much.
But there's trillions of dollars out there in this environment. Who knows? A week ago, who would have dreamt one individual would push the wheat market a matter of $2.30 in a matter of 12 hours? Yeah. I mean, that's how much power there's out there. There's just one. That was just one individual. There's hundreds of those guys out there. So you can't rule anything out. But make a long story short, live by the sword, die by the sword. The funds are long 600,000 contracts of corn. They're long 300,000 contracts of beans. Suppose they buy all the beans this year, next year, and the year after. Suppose they own 3 years of crop. All of a sudden they turn sellers. Who's going to be there to buy? Well, hopefully it won't be us. We'll get it sold on the way up. So buying opportunity. So our number one spec strategy is if the funds continue to buy a $35 soybean call, they're 5 cents. You go to 40, you're pretty well off. They don't go up, you're out 5 cents. The second spec trade would be July 90-cent soybean oil calls. Vegetable oil is going through the roof. Palm oil's strong. Our bean oil's got a lot of bump behind it. They're about $1.50, $1.60. From a producer's point of view, our number one strategy is to buy $12 November soybean puts for 50 cents. Now, how many times have you locked in $12 bean floor? Spend 50 cents, got a $12 floor. Beans go to $20, $25, $40. You turn around and sell your cash beans there. Look forward to answering your questions.
All right, thank you very much. That's Kurt Kimmel with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Next to him is Larry Wood. He's with the Anderson, somebody from their office, which is a very large elevator, and maybe you can tell some of the folks about your elevator in Champaign County, and they join us on Monday afternoons during the closing market report. Larry?
Well, thank you, Todd. We've heard a lot of interesting comments from the other panelists here about the market. And I don't know that I have a whole lot to add to that, other than if you asked me what I thought the market was going to do, I would tell you I have a sneaking suspicion that they will probably go higher, at least given where we are today and what the fundamentals look like. Talking about high prices like this, I think one of the things that I'd like to cover, at least in the next couple of minutes, is the impact that it's having on the commercial industry. That impact has been pretty significant, and I'll give you just a real quick example. It wasn't too long ago that you thought that selling me soybeans at $8 a bushel was a pretty good deal, and some of you did. (Clears throat) Well, when you do that, and that's for next fall. Let's assume it's for next fall. Well, the market went to $9. We send a dollar to Chicago for every bushel that we've bought. We have to carry that margin in Chicago for the next 12 months. At 6% interest that we have to borrow that money on, that's 6 cents a bushel. For a lot of elevators, that's a fairly decent margin. Then it went to 10. Now it's up to 15. So now we have about $8, $7 in Chicago. $7 times 6 cents a bushel is 42 cents. I don't think there are too many commercial elevators around here that make a margin quite that large. And that's one of the issues that we're facing right now, is that we have a lot of beans that are hedged below the market, and we have a lot of money in Chicago, and our margins are being eaten up by short-term interest costs. And I think you're already starting to see some of the cracks in the infrastructure out there, particularly with the smaller facilities that can't keep up with margin calls, or they're just back-to-backing it into the larger ones. And on top of that, if you look at some of the larger commercials like me, we're getting down to the point where we are restricting what we allow people to sell. If you go out to 2009, we're not even buying anything for 2009. If you look at 2008, we're charging fees to do that. Or the basis is getting really cheap. And that's one of the other significant factors with this kind of a market, as the market rallies, is that you're seeing basis levels get cheaper and cheaper as elevators are incorporating the short-term interest cost into their basis to help cover it. Now, it doesn't cover it from a cash flow standpoint, and that's where the pinch comes, that you have a significant issue, and maybe at some point with that cheaper basis, they're expecting that eventually they can recoup or recapture some of that profit. But from a cash flow perspective, it's getting really tough to maintain margins out there when the markets continue to rally like this. So I think, and as we go forward, and I think you're probably seeing that to some extent yourself, when you're looking at your own business and the amount of money that you have to go out and borrow from the banks. Just to manage your budget. I mean, what your budget is today, the capital that you need to run your farming operation could be 2 to 3 times what it was 12 to 24 months ago. And you're not the only ones that are in that boat. I mean, all of us that are commercials with the margin money that we have to put up, and not only for hedges that we have on for deferred contracts, but also for the inventory that we're carrying, it's getting pretty significant. And I know that we've already seen some facilities go down. We had an elevator in southern Illinois that got closed down just because the bank wouldn't loan them any more money. And if we continue to see prices move up like this at this rate, we're probably going to see more. So I'll stop there, and I'll answer any questions about anything that you might have.
Well, that was a happy note on a $15 bean day, wasn't it? Apparently an $8 sale on your part was one you regret and one he regrets just as much, because he's got nearly as much in that sale as you do. All right. Well, let's take up some of the factual things. We know what the price for crop insurance is going to be. What is it, $13.36? I have to think about that off the top of my head. Is that right? $13.36. So let's start with you, Brian, and maybe we should talk about whether you think they should take crop insurance on soybeans, and how to deal with that decision once it's been made.
Well, to me, that's a no-brainer. When you're sitting here with the kind of money that you're putting into this crop, you have to take out crop insurance, and I'm assuming it's going to be $60 to $70 an acre is probably what you're going to pay for it. And I liken it to insuring that Duster that I had when I graduated from Purdue versus a Mercedes today. I mean, that's what you're looking at in the dollars that you've got per acre. Now, you take that a step further, and you're sitting here with a market that's a buck and a half above that today, or roughly a buck and a half ahead of that, over a dollar anyhow. So you've now got the opportunity to lock in something better than those insurance numbers, especially on that, depending on what insurance you take out, that 20% that you don't have insured. You're able to get a value against that today, so I think you have to be somewhat cautious about where the marketplace is headed, because you've got, as I alluded in my opening comments, opportunities here that you can lock in even something better than the insurance rate today. But I think you have to take out the insurance just in case there is some type of crop problem this year.
You know, Wayne sells insurance, so he's going to probably tell us that you need to take out insurance. But he's also a broker. So tell me how you manage both the increased risk, downside risk that you now have because we have a higher price than the insurance. You manage the upside risk, and then you, if you take CRC, you manage the risk that's below $3 below the crop insurance. Too many questions at once? Take up whichever one you want.
No, of course not, Todd. Gil, there's many things, and we have many different policies, and there is no right policy to tell you all that you should take today. I think that you all need to look at your operation and your risk, because every one of the policies we sell is right for somebody in this crowd here today. And I think that that's one thing to look at. I think that Todd would like us to go into and say how we might be able to use some of the policies. I think that, you know, basically, depending on where you're at, the multi-peril or APH policy that just gives you bushels, if you want to just protect that you've got some of these bushels sold and you are not in a tight financial bind, that can be a great one at a lower cost. If you're going to aggressively market, the RA policy or revenue assurance is the highest policy we have other than GRIP that actually insures you and your acreage and your production. One insurance agent brought to my attention that the wheat market moved more in one day or in about a 20-minute time period than what the upside limit is on beans. And if they would go to Kurt's $40, the RA policy does not have a limit as how much it moves up, where CRC can only move up $3.
Yeah, CRC is at $3, but so, RA has no limit.
But RA doesn't. So that's something to consider if you're going to be very, very aggressively marketing and going up to your insurance guarantee and feeling you want to participate in the market or feeling you might have a yield shortfall. So those are the things to look at that way. I think on how we manage it along the way, I think it goes back to a little bit about the lesser of two regrets. Do you mind selling beans at $15, $14, $16, or $18? And that's how you either need to buy some calls if it does bother you when you market your cash grain, or you need to probably look at some puts in case your yields are very good.
Dan, I want to take up something on the tech side with you because you mentioned this. In a bull market like we are at the moment, on the tech side, you were talking about an eight-week cycle. Does the top generally come closer to the end of that cycle as opposed to the middle or the beginning?
On that particular length. Right. And if the thing would start coming earlier, then that may indicate that a larger cycle might be exerting its influences, and you just kind of stack them on up. And so on an eight-week cycle, let's say this next one, we start running out of gas on week one or week two, then that would be a strong indication that maybe the larger cycle has topped.
Anybody got a question they'd like to ask out loud? Yes, sir. Dan, while I'm going back here, why don't you what's your downside for this drop on the eight-week cycle, and then what's the upside potential?
Well,
I
don't have any downside until we actually turn down. The only thing what I'm indicating is based upon the cyclicals and an overbought technical condition that we're vulnerable to some kind of kick in here, whether it's this week or next week, and it could be, you know, quite scary. And then we'll have to – I would say that if the kick is deeper than a 38% retracement of the advance off the middle January low point, then that would be a caution sign. Again, that would be a signal that maybe a larger cycle is topping also.
I wanted to ask a question to Larry on the elevators and – to get back to what Todd said, if you think that $8 sale is a bad deal for the elevator, you know, we feel that way as the farmer that made the sale. But my question is, they're talking about all this money and the funds coming into the market. Shouldn't there be some sort of package together where an elevator could say, hey, I've got so many thousand bushel bought at $2, $4, $6 under the market and get financing on that money, it seemed like somebody should be very glad to accept that risk.
You're not a banker, are you?
No. The problem is it's an uncollateralized hedge. It's a hedge to arrive as crop that the commercial elevator does not have possession of, and the farmer, in many instances, hasn't even produced or even planted it. So it's an uncollateralized hedge, and bankers don't like anything that's uncollateralized. So there's where the problem exists. There's no problem with the stuff that is hedged in the elevator, because the elevator, if he has to, he'll just have to liquidate the cash, move that into the pipeline, bring that cash back in, and reduce his hedge exposure. But where the problem is like Larry mentioned, is all in the hedge to arrive, the 08 crop, 09 crop, 010. So unless there's a way that the farmer wants to collateralize that hedge, or someone else that wants to collateral. See, like if you go to your individual banker, let's say you open up an account with your futures broker next door, you go to the banker, and the banker will even get cold feet. Over the years, they're with you, yeah, we're in favor of you marketing, blah, 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 until come July and it's 100 degrees, no rain in sight, and then the farmer and the banker breaks out into a sweat. Says, oh, I got uncollateralized hedges out there. So there's where the problem is. It's the uncollateralized hedges that nobody wants to touch with a 10-foot pole.
Well, I think that since he's not happy with the $8 buy and you're not happy with an $8 sale, that you could just agree on a $14 price and go with that instead. Probably not.
Yes, I have a question. You know, meat going to go a lot higher, meat prices and the ethanol prices, and I think that, you know, I want every dollar I can get, but I think we'd be better off with $4 corn and $9 beans, but this is going to run the farmer, I'm afraid of. I mean, you're going to have the politicians in there and people crying, and there's just a lot of people that's going to be hurting on this. So what do you think that be best for the farmer?
That's an easy question. You answered it yourself. I think that we have went beyond. If we could hold our input cost down, I'd like to tell you, in a nutshell, P&K are at historical levels right now. Phosphorus barges are trading at $815 at New Orleans. And, of course, that's at New Orleans, folks. That's not here or delivered to your place. DAP, we're hearing rumors that it might trade as high as $1,000 in the next 2 weeks. Potash is at $510 to $530 delivered, New Orleans again. And there's concern about running out of potash during the season because it's already, the pipeline's dry. It's $600 in Brazil, and they're probably going to $600 here in the near future. So that, and along with it, if we didn't have those things just continuing to climb, we'd be a lot better off not having Washington wanting to cut all subsidies, wanting to cut import quotas, wanting to do all that and have a good, fair return. I'm sure all of you that have cash rent got the opportunity to pay more for this year's crop. Your input costs are terrible. I know that from booking early on fertilizer prices to if you buy it now, it's about $60 an acre more in our area just to put out that same corn crop. So I'd sort of like to go back and ask the crowd a little bit, have these prices and these fertilizer prices, how many are going to plant more beans than they planned on, say, in December? The same, no change. Okay, that's where most everybody's at. And how about more corn than last year? Okay, so we've got a few guys switching to a few more beans. Most everybody's sticking with the rotation from last year and what's going on. But I would say overall, if we could have kept our fertilizer prices in line, you're much true, because everybody is looking at this, the landlord, fertilizer dealers, Washington especially, and it's not a good thing to be at these higher levels with everything else.
Chris Hurd of Purdue University wrote this weekend that we are within 3 weeks of being sold out of our exportable inventory. Is there really a stopping point when the grain sellers, the people that have the grains, actually stop selling to the exports, or will the price stop them from doing that? Or what kind of a statement is that exactly? What's that mean?
What was he referencing? Wheat?
Soybeans. Exportable soybeans. 3 weeks of exportable soybeans available.
What happened, especially in the wheat, it is front-loaded. For example, we met our export goal within 2 months of the marketing year. And when you look at corn and bean sales so far, we've been pulling these sales forward. Now, the key is to watch the weekly export inspections report and see if we actually shift these sales out. But it's not unusual to see these sales brought forward and have a large inventory sold. Now, what will slow the exports would be if they turn around and sell it. The other thing would be if they're already booked up, they would slow. And beans especially is traditional that we see that demand shift to the southern hemisphere as we get into March and April.
I'm wondering, the way you phrased it sounds like we were going to run out of, that they would just stop selling it, but is it more likely, I guess, that what he said is that they were just front-loading and that we would meet the export market's needs in a three-week time frame potentially? How did he phrase it, do you recall? Okay.
Well, there's nothing wrong. I mean, that's a correct statement. I mean, and eventually if you would oversell, then the market would have to go higher. But some of those sales may have been generated by some hoarding. Anytime you get into an up market, people have a tendency to buy a little bit more, a little extra. And then if the South American crop comes on quite well, then you may see some cancellations or shift in origination and that kind of stuff. So that's the demand for soybeans have been awfully strong, and of course it depends upon what kind of ending stocks number is used. And actually, many in the trade are using a smaller ending stocks number than what the government's already using.
Any other questions somebody wants to ask? Yes, sir. Go ahead and yell it out, and I'll repeat it.
It's due to China and India and Brazil. The dollar, of course, is an influence as such if they're pricing it in dollars and they're willing to pay more because of it. Right now, or during the spring or during the fall time period, I talked to one of the importers from Russia, and they actually told me that they could drop all of their potash in India or China and make $100 a ton more in the spot market at that point in time. They do not want to give up their percentage of the U.S. market, but they were to keep their share, which they did ship, or they did stop one supercargo as it was, and that's part of it. It's your demand from India, China, and South America that's driving this tremendously hard.
Did he get your question right? Okay, can you repeat the question for me? I think
the question was, is it just the dollar dropping, or is it other competition that's bringing the fertilizer price up? Is that what you're talking about? The fertilizer price is going to continue to stay high. Demand exceeds supply for right now by 1.5 to 2 million tons in the next couple of years. The pipeline is basically empty for anhydrous, potash, and DAP at this point in time. When the pipeline were full, we could go back to some of the other cycles and it would go down in a hurry. Pipeline's not full. They could actually produce for 6 months, and if we didn't use any, it would just fill the pipelines back up.
All right, let's go across the board. We have about 6-7 minutes left. It'll probably take this long. And we'll start with Larry. Let's say that what's the average sales out there for new crop soybeans? 10%? Are you that far along? No? Further along than that?
We got record metal.
25%? Sound like more like it? All right. So we're 25% sold. How many are you going to use crop insurance for beans? Okay. Good. 25% sold, they're going to use crop insurance, they'll pick out what it is. What's your best marketing advice?
Well, up to this point, waiting has been the best advice that you could have.
All right. That's good.
First of all, I think your first line of defense, and we've already discussed it a little bit, is getting crop insurance, you know, using RA. You've got probably the highest February average you've ever had. RA, of course, is going to cover you without limits on the upside or downside. It's a little bit more expensive, but it's probably going to be the cheapest put that you can buy. Probably equivalent to about 60 to 65% of what a put is going to cost you out the mark at the market out there right now. My suggestion would be you buy the crop insurance and you just wait. I mean, it's paid you to do that. What you have sold on the books, hopefully, there will be the cheapest sales that you had. Doesn't mean you can't go ahead and sell more. One of the issues that you might find as the prices continue to ratchet up is finding a place to sell them. The second alternative would be to go ahead and add some kind of minimum price floor. Buying a put would be the one thing that I would do. And that gives you, even for the price that you pay out there, that'll give you a fairly good floor, and it'll give you any opportunity on the upside between now and August before you have to deliver soybeans. So those would be my two suggestions.
Larry Wood is with the Andersons, and somebody from that office joins us during the closing market report at about 2:25 on Monday afternoons. Kirk Kimmel joins us during the closing market report and the opening market report on Mondays. Your best advice?
Well, our fear is that the funds could turn sellers. January saw beans drop $1.50 and rebound. Our next drop could be as much as $2.50 and rebound. Our second fear is we could maybe have more closer to 75 million bean acres versus 68 or 69 where the industry's at. So, therefore, we feel there's downside risk in the bean market as a producer. As far as cash sales go, we're 40% sold. We'd like to, with an average of 13.35, we'd like to go to 50% sold in the cash. If November futures get up to 5.75, we'd like to be 50% sold. 1575.
I've been
doing this for a while.
I said five on the air yesterday.
1575. 50% sold ahead of the crop report at the end of the month on acres. Then we like Larry said, and like I said before, we like buying put options. You know, buy a $12, $13 put, put a floor into you. You know, you've never been able to do that before. If the weather guys come in, we have a drought, and we go sky high, you still got some cash to sell.
Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities. He joins us on Tuesdays. Wayne?
Well, I have to agree with both the guys who have talked here before. They've brought up some really good points. I agree with Larry. The best thing to do so far is, which we all haven't done, well, maybe not all, maybe there's probably a few people I haven't sold anything, but most of us have sold something, and we're wrong, and it seems to be biting us, and it's sort of irritating. But these are tremendously high prices. We've never seen these prices before. It's the highest any of us have ever got. So, you know, I think that we need to wait just a little bit now before we push to do anything, because Dan's talking about the cycles. But somewhere, as Kurt was saying, in the $15.75 to $16 mark, I feel some sort of coverage. And what you feel comfortable with, is it to sell cash and buy a call back? Is it to sell cash and don't buy a call for your first percentage you're selling? Is it to buy a put? We have to remember that the puts are ridiculously high, but do you want to sell one? You know, that's the idea. It's not too high if you aren't willing to sell it that way. Do you want to buy an out-of-the-money call after you make a cash sale? That's something you can do also. They are expensive. You have to be willing to say, I'm going to lock in a fence of some sort of a minimum price, and maybe I'll take a higher price. You know, you can sell some of those $22 calls also. They require margin calls if it goes against you, but is the worst-case scenario making margin calls and actually delivering $22 beans or collecting that money to help pay for the put that you want to sell? You have to say whether you have the psyche and the financing to be short any of these options.
Wayne Nelson, of course, is with L&M Commodities, not too far from here in New Market, Indiana. Dan Zwicker at ADM Grain Group in Decatur, Illinois.
Sell the high.
Sell the high. Listen on Thursdays. He hopes that's the day it comes in.
I think for all practical purposes, I think you're basically restricted to a purchase of a put. Whether or not you want to do one at the money or below the money, whatever. But I think in the current environment, if you want some downside price protection that's manageable, basically is a purchase of a put. I think if this thing goes significantly higher, your basis levels in your distant fall bids are going to get wide, super wide, because nobody's going to want to own that inventory back there. So you're going to see end users right now. You got to picture yourself as an end user. If you're a hog producer or a turkey producer, do you want to go out and buy a $400 meal? Do you want to book that in? Do you want to go out and book in 550 corn? So what's going to happen is your end users, now they may be wrong. They may wish they bought some 550 corn and some $400 meal. But at this point, what they're going to do is going to say, I'm just going to, you know, why lock in a loss? Why should I buy that inventory? I'm going to stay patient and see how the growing season goes. And I think that's what's good. So in return, what's going to happen is that there's no buyers out there, then your local place that you sell your inventory, is going to, the basis levels are going to be awful weak because they can't spread that off. So I think what you're going to be looking at is using some puts to lock in some downside price risk. And just because you buy a put doesn't necessarily mean you got to sit there and wait for it to go to zero. It's, you know, as time goes on, the crop acres production becomes more certain. Then you can maybe convert that to a cash forward sale. Your local elevator will begin to get more comfortable with buying those distant positions. So I guess that would be my best advice if you wanted to take some chips off the table here and protect the downside, as well as purchase of a crop insurance policy. We want you to have crop insurance policies, because we want the insurance company to have to pay the difference rather than you if you come up short on a crop. And I'm hoping a lot of wheat farmers have crop insurance, because about every market advisor in the world sold farmers to sell wheat at $6.
Yes,
so I hope they got some crop insurance on that.
Brian, we're out of time. No.
I knew that's what you were going to tell me.
Go ahead. Brian Maple, we can hear him on Mondays, on Tuesdays on the radio.
Monday morning, actually. Yeah. Just a quick note, we didn't really address old crop beans, but take note that you've got a $1.20 inverse between the July and the November. So between now and sometime early July, you're probably going to want to be out of any old crop beans that you've got. As far as marketing, I've always been in the camp that as you move through March, I want to come out of March with roughly half of my crop marketed for the next year, whether that be with puts or in the cash market. That's totally up to you and what you're comfortable with. These guys have addressed how expensive it is to use the options. There's still, you know, people that sold the $8 beans would be much happier to have that put on today than if they'd actually sold the cash. So they are expensive, but you're buying something that's very valuable today. So I like coming out of this time period with roughly 50% sold. I'll tell you, I'm more concerned about soybeans than I am the corn today, mainly because I think we have bought the bean acres in a lot of areas, not necessarily Illinois and Iowa, but you get on east and you get down the southeast, I think we're going to see big acreage increases. And I think we're going to have a better crop out of South America than what we've been talking. And we saw this week AgriConsultant talking about 66 to 67 million tons out of Brazil next year. So I'm probably more concerned about beans, and I'll let it go from there, Todd.
Thank you very much. Give these folks a hand.